And so to continue on the Haggadah, so I'm still explaining ideas from this Haggadah called the Masilka Or this year from Rabbi Shlomo Levenstein in Bnei Brak. So I want to speak a little bit about Avadim Hayinu. So right after Manishtana, we move into Avadim Hayinu. Just I guess we'll read it together inside, and then we can explain the idea. He says, "So Avadim Yilvaru Mitzrayim, we were slaves to Paro in Egypt. We had seen our Hashem Okinu Misham Ve'achazok Resorted to Hashem took us out with a strong hand, outstretched arm." And then it says, if Hashem didn't take us out of Mitzrayim, then we and our children and our children's children would still be enslaved or subject to Paro in Mitzrayim. And then it continues, even if we were all wise, all understanding, all sages, all knew the Torah, it'd still be mitzvah to speak about Yitzis Mitzrayim. And Chomar Bel Sabas Mitzrayim, anybody who speaks more about Yitzis Mitzrayim, Reza Meshubach, that is praiseworthy. So this last line at the end of this paragraph, it speaks about how as wise as we are, as understanding as we are, as much as we know, we still mitzvah to speak about Yitzis Mitzrayim. It's one of these things which is interesting to us. I mean, all of us have been in many, many stages over our lives. We know the story very well. And the truth is, there is always something to add in. There's always new lessons to take from the story, new points we haven't heard before. Every year we get a little different inspiration. That's true. But ultimately, you could say, well, what's the point of saying the same story over and over again? Maybe we should then just skip to the parts that we don't know about and study those at the Seder or something. Like, what's the idea? And it says, even if we were great to Chachamim, even if we were all knowledgeable and wise, we still have to do this. So you take a person who, you know, basically knows the entire story, all the Midrashim, all the ideas, and they still have to sit there and explain the story. What's that concept? So he quotes here that there's two types of knowledge out there. One he calls in Hebrew Meida Chadashusi, which means it's something new to me. It's news. I never knew this before, and I pick up on a piece of information. So if someone doesn't know the story, he will then go ahead and learn points of the story. That's number one. And that's interesting, and that's obviously meaningful in its own right because you're learning new information. So every year at the Seder, we do have those things which are new to us. The Torah is never ending. The Torah is infinite. There's always new ideas. But something also that is called, he calls it Meida Chavayati, which means experiential knowledge. Which the point is not that the information is new, but you're trying to bring together an experience. You're trying to relive something. You're trying to tap into it in an experiential way. So like, for instance, if you run into an old friend, so we always like to reminisce. Now we both know what happened. You know, we're not saying anything new. But when you reminisce about things which happened a long time ago, you kind of relive the moments, you feel good about it, you feel connected to each other and to that event, and that's very common that we do. So the part of the idea of the Seder, possibly the main idea, is the experiential knowledge, that I'm trying to re-experience those events of Yitzis Mitzrayim. So even though I know what happened, it's like meeting an old friend. I want to go back through, we talk, and the truth is the deeper connection that we had, and the more we experience together, the longer and more we have to share. So somebody you shared one experience with, so you meet them, you speak that experience, and then that's it. Let's say a childhood friend that you're very close with, you know, for years and years and years. You went through school, and you went to each other's weddings. And it was, you know, so then you have a lot to share. If you bump into each other years down the road, you're out of touch. There's a lot to share. And it's not because we're sharing anything new. It's because we're re-experiencing those moments we lived through when we were younger. So he says that this is the idea of the Seder. We're trying to re-experience the depth of the experience that we had in Mitzrayim. And every year, that experience should become deeper and deeper. The more we feel connected to Klal Yisrael, to the miracles of Mitzrayim, the more we're able to actually tap into those moments. So it says, he says here, when it says in the Haggadah, the Kol Marbe Sabras Mitzrayim, the more that you share about the story of Mitzrayim Reza Meshubach. So the simple interpretation is that you are praiseworthy for doing so. It's praiseworthy to speak at length about the story. But the other way you can interpret it is Reza Meshubach, the person, is a praiseworthy person. I mean, the better person you are, I mean, the more you're connected with Klal Yisrael and Mitzrayim, that comes out through how much you want to share about Mitzrayim, because it shows you have a deeper and more intense, you know, more intimate connection to the story than others do. So if we get bored at the Seder after 10 minutes, that shows that we have a lack of connection to the story. if we could sit there for hours and hours discussing and reliving the points and going back through things again, that shows we have a deeper connection. Everyone at their own level has their connection to the story. And we do get tired, so that's a different issue. But you know, the interest which is there and the excitement which is there shows the, how much we're experiencing the story which occurred in Mitzrayim thousands of years ago. So the more meshubach, the more praiseworthy a Jew is, the more a person has a deep connection to the story, that person will speak about it more and more and more. So that's this point. The Haggadah continues, and it brings up what seems to us to be somewhat of a random point. The Haggadah continues and says there's a story with Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon, who are all having a Seder together in Bnei Brak, and they're speaking about Tzitzit Mitzrayim the entire night until the students came and they said, Higiyazman Kriyashma Shel Shacharis, it's time for Kriyashma. So many ask, what's the point of this paragraph in the Haggadah at all? I mean, the Haggadah is supposed to be teaching us about Tzitzit Mitzrayim, and it happens to be they're having a Seder. I mean, that's what they were doing. But it doesn't seem to add too much about this story. And what's the lessons that we get from this story? So the one point which is made is that it sort of, it dovetails off the previous point we made, that you're supposed to not just tell a story, but you're supposed to be involved in it intimately. So this paragraph points out that they were so involved in the story, they went the whole night long, and they didn't realize it was morning. That's because these great sages were so intimately connected to the story of Tzitzit Mitzrayim, it just kept on going, and it never stopped. And it really highlights our mitzvah at the Seder. Really, every single day of the year, there's a mitzvah to remember Tzitzit Mitzrayim. It's built into Shema in the morning and at night. The last paragraph of Shema mentions, "Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Asher Hotzeitzi Etzchem Eretz Mitzrayim." I am Hashem, took you out of Mitzrayim. So many ask, well, then what are we adding in exactly at the Seder? I mean, I have a mitzvah every night to mention Tzitzit Mitzrayim. The answer is, well, every night the mitzvah is just to mention it. But at the Seder, the mitzvah is to relate the story. And not just that, to be marich, to relate the story at length, and to elaborate upon the story, and to get into the story. So when you talk about these great sages sitting at the Seder in Bnei Brak, they were showing us, as they're a model for us. They're a model that they got so engaged and so involved in the story that they couldn't stop, and they didn't realize that the night had passed. For us, usually, again, we get so tired, we know when it's getting late. But they were so engaged, so involved, so excited about it. They were and like we said before, they knew all about it. These were the greatest sages of Klal Yisrael. So it wasn't like they were adding necessarily new information in. But they were living the experience. And that experience to them was so engaging. It took them in a way which they didn't realize it was morning until they were told it's the morning. The another point made over here is that the following paragraph, it quotes from Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who says the famous words, "I am as if I'm 70 years old, and I would never merited to mention Tzitzit Mitzrayim at night until Ben Zoma came along and proved it to me through a pasuk." So Ben Zoma found a verse in the Torah in which he saw that there's an obligation to mention Tzitzit Mitzrayim every single night. And then the Chachamim, the sages, respond and they say that we have another point to add in, that you have to mention Mitzrayim every day of your life in this world, and also there'll be an obligation to mention it in the days of Mashiach. So the story in Bnei Brak continues on into this discussion, which discusses how there's a mitzvah to mention Mitzrayim both in our current lifetime and also in the days of Mashiach. So what's the point being made over here? So Rav Kamenetsky says the following. He says that we know that the Pasuk in Yirmiyah teaches us. It says, Yamim Baim, the Mashem, days are coming, and the times of Mashiach, the miracles will be so great, they'll be so vast, that people will say, Chai Hashem, may Hashem live, who brought the Jews out of their current exile. I mean, until now, Hashem's great standing in the world, that he frees Jews from Mitzrayim. Once Mashiach comes, and the Jews are brought back to Israel, and we experience the final redemption, so Hashem's great stature, as it were, will be boosted by the miracles he did in Yemos Mashiach, when the Mashiach comes. And there'll be the Pasuk seems to reference the fact that the praise for Hashem will be focused on Mashiach and not on the exodus from Mitzrayim. So, there's an important point here. There is a mitzvah to remember Mitzrayim even when Mashiach comes. So even though Hashem's miracles at that point are greater, we still have to keep this remembrance up. So we try to highlight that in the Haggadah to show how important is this discussion. This discussion isn't only for current times. This discussion is eternal. this discussion is important even when Mashiach comes, and even though you're going to see greater miracles than what happened in Mitzrayim, the lessons of Yetzias Mitzrayim are so fundamental, those will never be lost. And I would point out very clearly, I think that we're describing that the miracles may be of greater magnitude in the future, but the lessons that were learned are still based on what happened in Mitzrayim. That's the foundations of what it means to be a Jew, it's the foundations of life. So we'll never stop mentioning Yetzias Mitzrayim, despite the fact that we may see greater miracles in the future. So we want to bring that out as part of sort of the framework of our Seder, because that shows us the importance of what's happening. So these two paragraphs, the story of the Seder in Bnei Brak, and the discussion of the mitzvah to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim, even when Mashiach comes, there's sort of a model for us and a framework for the Seder, the excitement, the engagement we should have, and the importance of the information. The information is something which, even if you know it, you have to relive it. Even if you're reliving it, you have to be totally engaged in it, and realize that this is eternal lessons which are with us even through Mashiach's times. He quotes here one more explanation, which it's a little bit, I would say, a little bit tangential to the simple meaning of the Haggadah, but it's a very important lesson, so I'll share that with you as well. This is actually quoted from Rav Yashiv Zatzal. Rav Yashiv would say the following. The characters mentioned in this whole discussion here, we said there was a Maisa with Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rav Nazari. We're mentioning really the greatest sages of Klal Yisrael. In the next paragraph, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says that, you know, my whole life, you know, he was a very great person, one of the greatest sages around. He says, my whole life, I never was able to merit or prove that there was a mitzvah to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim at night until Ben Zoma came along and proved it to me. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was somebody who was great in his own right, but he needed Ben Zoma to come and prove this to him. So Rabbi Yashiv said the following point, very, very important point. Rav Yashiv said, what's my page? Rav Yashiv said that there's another story quoted in the Gemara. The Gemara says that one time the great sage Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus, sounds like he was sick, and they came to visit him. So just to get the name straight, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanania came to visit Rabbi Dosa. So Rabbi Dosa, I guess, was the elder. Rabbi Dosa, it seems to be that maybe he was sick, or he was, you know, sort of the oldest of the sages, and they came to visit him. So they came to his house, and the maidservant came in and announced that, you know, the sages have come to see you. So Rabbi Dosa is very excited. He invites in the sages. He says, come on in, and they entered in. So the first thing he did was that he told Rabbi Yehoshua, he said, you go sit down over there on that golden couch. So Rabbi Yehoshua has been given this great honor of sitting on a golden couch. So Rabbi Yeshua said to Rabbi Dosa, he said, Rabbi, how about your other students over here? Why can't they sit down? So he said, well, who's over there? Who are these other two guys? I don't know who they are. So again, I'm not sure if he didn't know them or if he just maybe he was sick and old and he didn't understand who they were. He says, well, over here is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So he says, oh, wow. He says, our friend Azariah has a son of that stature. So he says, it makes sense, you know, Azariah was a great sage himself. And he said, Narhisi Gamzakanti, you know, I was young and now I'm old. I never saw a righteous person who was forsaken. So it makes sense he has a son who's great. And he took him and put him on a golden couch as well. So he's now seated Rabbi Yeshua on a golden couch and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah on a golden couch. So then Rabbi Yeshua says, well, there's another student over here. What about him? And he says, well, who is this person? Who's this other guy? He says, this is Akiva ben Yosef, Rabbi Akiva. So he says, you're Rabbi Akiva, the one whose name has traveled from one end of the world to the other, the famous Rabbi Akiva. He says, sit down, my son, sit. And he tells him a very powerful line. He says, may people like you increase amongst Klal Yisrael. So he points out, so there's three sages here, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar, and Rabbi Akiva. Each one accorded, you know, great honor, but only to Rabbi Akiva did he give him this special blessing that may people like you increase amongst Klal Yisrael. So why did Rabbi Akiva deserve this blessing and the other two didn't get this blessing? What happened? So so Rav Yashiv explained the following. And this is the point. And others say this as well. Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yehoshua, they both came from very prestigious lineage. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was a descendant of Ezra, the great Ezra of the Tanakh, Ezra Sofer. He was somebody known to be very wealthy, came from a very prestigious family. Rabbi Yehoshua as well had similar virtues. But Rabbi Akiva was someone who came from very simple. Rabbi Akiva, we knew, grew up. He was not a sage in his youth. He was not Ma'aretz. He was ignorant of Judaism. He started learning when he was older. He only became a great sage, you know, basically when he was, you know, between 40 and 80 were his great years of studying and becoming Rabbi Akiva as he was. And he lived 120, they say. He taught for another 40 years after that. But Rabbi Akiva was someone who came from a very simple lineage. His father was a convert. He grew up in a family that was not a learned family. And Rabbi Akiva is someone who didn't come with the benefits of Yichus. So they explain that I can't give you a blessing to become, you should get Yichus. You are who you are. Your parents are your parents. You're a descendant of whoever your ancestors were. So to give this, so that blessing, you know, it is or it isn't. But that's not, we can't say, may people like you increase in Klai Yisrael, because not everyone has that lineage. Not everyone has those benefits. But Rabbi Akiva is someone who was a self-made man, as it were, not coming from benefits of Yichus, coming from a very simple family. And he said, if someone as great as Rabbi Akiva could come from a simple background like that, then may many more Rabbi Akivas arise in Klal Yisrael. Because anybody could step up, put in the effort of Rabbi Akiva, and become great like Rabbi Akiva. So that's the point. So Rabbi Akiva is somebody who had zero Yichus, he came from converts, but he's the one who gives hope to us all that no matter where you're coming from, if you put forth that hard work, you can be great. So Rabbi Yashiv would explain, it's the same thing here in the Haggadah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, as we said, was somebody who came from a very, very prestigious family. And he, as great as he was, didn't understand this point about speaking about Yitzchak Yisraim every single night. He says, I never merited to have this proof until Ben Zoma taught me. Ben Zoma was somebody also who came from a simple background. Ben Zoma wasn't even called Rebbe, he was called Ben Zoma. He didn't have the name, he didn't have smicha. Never ordained as a Rebbe. He was younger, he died younger, etc. But Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, the great sage, learned from him. And it's a lesson in the Haggadah that the greatness in Klal Yisrael is not based on your family, it's not based on who you descend from, it's not based on the prestige or the privilege a person might get. I'm growing up in that type of family. It's based on our own personal efforts. And when we work hard and we strive to become better Jews, we can achieve greatness in those areas. If we don't work hard, then we don't achieve greatness. Like Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva worked hard despite his lack of Yichus, and he became great. So Rabbi Yashua said, so that's a lesson that God is trying to bring out to us. When we speak about Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah learning from Ben Zoma, it's the lesson that as great as you are, as great as your family is, true greatness comes from within. And if you put forth that hard work, you become great. So again, it's a side point in terms of the Haggadah, but it's a very important point for every single Jew. We have to understand that the greatness is not based on where we come from, it's based on who we are and what we do with our lives. It's an interesting point from Rabbi Yashiv. Moving along over here, let's move into the question of the wise son, the Chacham. So we have the four sons here. And Chacham, he asked the question, Ma'edus v'chukim v'mishpatim, what are these laws and statutes that Hashem, our God, has commanded you? So commentaries ask the question, if you look at the question of the Rasha, the wicked son, he says, Ma'avodah zoslechem, what is this labor to you? What is this service to you? And the Gada gets upset with him. And the Gada says, why are you excluding yourself from the Jewish people? You're saying, what did Hashem command you? You should say us, you shouldn't say you. But the problem is that the Chacham also says you. He says, what are these laws that Hashem our God has commanded you? So that they both use the term commanded you, not commanded me or commanded us. But the Chacham is called wise, and he's, you know, he's given great esteem, and the Rasha is looked at as a wicked son, and he's excluded himself from Klal Yisrael. He doesn't deserve to be saved. So what's the difference between the two? So many answers are given to this, but I think the simple difference is the following: if you look at the question of the wise son, he mentions Hashem our God. So when you say Hashem our God, you've already included yourself in Klal Yisrael. You've recognized, you know, where it's all from. And even if later on he might say, what did Hashem command you? Which maybe it's not the best way to phrase the question. It's possible even that he made a mistake in that. But he hasn't excluded himself from Klal Yisrael. No, he's admitted to the fact that Hashem is our God. But the Rasha doesn't mention Hashem at all. The Rasha goes straight to, you know, what is this work that you're doing? He doesn't mention anything about God. And certainly not our God. The Chacham mentions God. and mentions our God. So the Chacham is recognizing that there's a God who commanded this, and he's recognizing that he's our God. And he said, why did he command this to you? The Rasha doesn't recognize either point. He seems to be ignoring the fact that there's a God, and certainly there's no, he doesn't call it our God. So that's an important point to think about. In terms of ourselves, it's important to know how to ask a question. Now, we're allowed to have questions. You know, Jews, we're very intellectually honest, and we pride ourselves on questions. But the basis of a question as a Jew is that this is a command of God. He's our God. I'm part of the Jewish people, but I don't understand X. Versus saying, you know, what are you doing that for? It's a very big difference between the two. Because one is being built up on a basis of emunah, that I recognize as a God in the world who commanded X, Y, and Z. And one is just a confrontation over a practice. So it's important that, you know, we should ask questions, and we encourage questions, and questions are good. But you want to ask the question of the Chacham, not of the Rasha. So the Chacham, he premises his question on the fact, Hashem, our God, commanded all this, but what's it for? Versus the Rasha just attacking the practice and ignoring God. There's a very big difference between the two. The furthermore, on the discussion of the Rasha, so the Haggadah looks at the Rasha and says that because he's excluded himself from the group, he's a kofar b'ikr, he's denied the primary foundations of means to be a Jew, and you should tell him, well, because of this, Hashem took me out of Mitzrayim, me, but not him. If he was there, he wouldn't have been redeemed. So we find that if a Rasha would not deserve to be redeemed from Mitzrayim. And this is true. Chazal tell us that, you know, really 4/5 of the Jews died in Mitzrayim. They didn't merit to be redeemed. So there's a very interesting question from the Ma'aril Diskin. Ma'aril Diskin was one of the great rabbanim of Yerushalayim, a very genius. And the Ma'aril Diskin, he asked the following question. He said that we have two characters in the Chumash that were known to be terrible Rishayim, Dasan and Aviram. Dasan and Aviram, wherever you find trouble in the Chumash, they're the ones behind it all. They're explicitly involved in Korach's rebellion. That's the place where they're namely mentioned. But the rabbis teach us that many other places where you find problems being caused, people questioning Moshe, people questioning God, people doing things that are wrong, is Dasan and Aviram. The ones who are out there collecting the man on Shabbos, Dasan and Aviram. The ones who are complaining in Mitzrayim about too much work, Dasan and Aviram. Chazal say these two guys are always causing problems. So the Ma'aril Diskin asked the question, or I don't know if he asked the question, but some asked the question, they say, well, why did Dasan and Aviram get saved then? If we're saying, well, the Rasha, who just simply has stated that I'm not part of the Jewish people, he should be saved. So Dasan and Aviram, which seems much worse, they actually caused all these issues. Why are they saved from Mitzrayim? And they were doing this in Mitzrayim itself, the rabbis tell us, not just after the Exodus, but even in Mitzrayim, they were the ones causing issues, questioning God, fighting against each other, fighting against others. When it says two Jews were fighting, you know, and Moshe had to come and break it up, as Dasan and Aviram. So from the start, they were troublemakers. So why did they get saved? So Ma'aril Diskin says the following. He says that the pasuk tells us in Shmos, it says that the officers of the Jewish people, they actually took beatings on behalf of the Jews. If the Jewish slaves did not produce enough bricks to meet their quota, the Egyptian slave drivers would come and beat up the officers who are supposed to manage all the Jews. So all the Jews were supposed to be working. They had, you know, those Jews that were put into a position of authority to manage the Jews, and they had the slave drivers coming and beating up the Jews who had the authority. So why were they beaten? Because they weren't going to pressure the Jews to work so hard. They had compassion on their Jewish brethren, and they said, do your best. But the Jews didn't do their best. Instead of the Jews with authority taking it out upon the Jewish slaves, they took a beating for them instead. A very big thing to care for their Jewish brothers and sisters. So what did they merit because of this great, you know, this was a great merit. You know, they gave up their own personal, they suffered on behalf of other Jews. So the rabbis tell us that when Moshe Rabbeinu chose 70 elders that should become prophets, have Ruach HaKodesh upon them, this is in Parshas, I think Baloscha, I think is where this is quoted. So Hashem said, give me those officers that were in charge of the Jews in Mitzrayim, the ones who took a beating on behalf of their brothers and sisters, and give them the special privilege of getting Ruach HaKodesh, of getting Nevuah. So Dasan and Aviram were actually part of this group of officers. Now, they didn't get Nevuah, they didn't get prophecy, because, you know, they were wicked people. But they did take beatings on behalf of their Jewish brothers and sisters. So even though they were wicked and caused problems and they rebelled, there was definitely some merit within them. Because if they're willing to take a beating on behalf of another, that shows there's some noble quality within. So Maharal Diskin said, because of this, even though they were Rishayim, they're wicked, they deserve to be saved. And it shows us the power of caring, of sympathizing with our fellow Jews. That even if, you know, everywhere else in our lives, we're not serving God properly, but our compassion is shown towards other Jews, it's a tremendous chus for us, a tremendous merit, and that merit allowed them to be saved from Mitzrayim. So it's a very, very powerful, again, a powerful lesson for us to show our care for other Jews. We'll head over here. The Haggadah continues after the four sons, and it says, you might think to have the Seder at Rosh Chodesh. So Rosh Chodesh is this coming Shabbos. Right? So the Haggadah says that there was actually a thought that you should have your Seder on Rosh Chodesh Nisan instead of on the 15th of Nisan. So instead of doing it in 2 weeks from now, we're doing it this coming Shabbos, which none of us are ready for. So it's good thing it's in 2 weeks from now. But the Haggadah says, no, you don't do it on that day, because Bayomahu. Because it says on that day means the day they actually left. They left on the 15th of Nisan, not on Rosh Chodesh. So then it says, you might think you should do the Seder during the daytime, Ojom, because it says Bayomahu on that day. So it says, no, Ba'avor Zeh, because of this. Because of this tells you that there's a this involved. When the matzah and maror are in front of you, that's when you're supposed to do the Haggadah. So just to put it in other words, there's a mitzvah to tell the story. There's a mitzvah to eat matzah and maror. Matzah and maror certainly have to be eaten on the night of the 15th of Nisan. That's clear. The story, we're not sure when to tell the story. But the Haggadah teaches us that based on these verses, Bayomahu, on that day, Ba'avor Zeh, because of this, you do it on the 15th of Nisan, at night, when you have in front of you matzah and maror. So there's some special idea of telling the story with matzah and maror on the table in front of you. So before I get into what he describes about this, one just simple, important idea about matzah and maror in front of you is that the Seder really is a unique event that we have in front of us, the conversation pieces. The halacha is you're supposed to keep the matzah uncovered during the recitation of Magid, while you're telling the story. It's supposed to be there in front of you uncovered. Because the Seder is supposed to be an experience that involves the entire person. You know, it's not just a discussion, but there's sight, there's smell, there's taste, there's feel. We're actually at the Seder, it's a full body experience. So part of the Seder is to look, it's to touch, you hold it up, you eat it, you listen to the crunching, you're able to get involved with your entire being in the story. So, and that's an essential part of it. Ba'avor Zeh means that as you speak about the story, you're able to point to the items and say, yeah, that's the matzah that we ate with Mitzrayim. And there's the maror there, which reminds us of the bitter times. You're supposed to be able to look at it and feel it, because it's a full-body experience. So that's part of it. So you don't divorce the mitzvahs of eating matzah from the mitzvah telling the story. They're together, and they go together. And you're supposed to tell the story over these conversation pieces. The Tzatzvach, which is the sefer written by the Nodi Behuda, the Rav of Prague, he writes a very important point. He says that when we say you want the matzah and maror in front of you, well, what about the Karban Pesach? I mean, if you think about it, in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, there was more than the matzah and maror. The Karban Pesach, you'd have this big lamb on the table, or goat, and that'd be part of what's on your table at the Seder. And we're not used to that. And we put out the bone to remind us of the lamb or of the goat, but in times of Beis Hamikdash there should have been a Karban Pesach there as well. So why is the Haggadah say you're supposed to say the story with matzah and maror in front of you? It should say with matzah and maror and Karban Pesach in front of you, because that was the official way to do it, and that was the original way to do it. Why is that being ignored in this line of the Haggadah? So he says that, you know, we understand, the sages understood, that there would be a time in the future we'd be in Galus, we'd be in exile, and we wouldn't have the Karban. And they wanted to show us that the Seder is relevant even those times. If the Haggadah told me the Seder should be done when you have in front of you the Karban Pesach, I'd say, well, nowadays I don't have that, so my Seder, you know, is not so important. You know, it's lacking. It's you know, and I wouldn't give the Seder its proper attention. So I'll think I'm doing like a sort of like a half effort over here, because I'm missing the main ingredients of the Seder. But sages say no, the Seder is done with the matzah and maror in front of you. Even without the Karban Pesach, you don't need the Karban Pesach for it. It's unfortunate we don't have it, but the Seder is just as important, just as powerful, even lacking that lamb or that goat. There's still an obligation to tell the story, and the story remains relevant. And it's a lesson for us that no matter where we are in history, no matter what we're doing, The story of Yetzias Mitzrayim is always relevant. It's not just relevant if we're sitting in Yerushalayim and we have a Beis Hamikdash and we're sitting there, you know, in unity with all of Klal Yisrael. So we would say, now that this is what freedom is, this is nobility, and we'll say, but we're sitting in Galus, in exile. No, this is not full freedom. No, we can't do as we please as Jews. We can't do the mitzvahs we want. Even now in America, where things are relatively good historically, we're still not free to do everything we want to do. We're still governing ourselves as we should. We don't have Beis Hamikdash. No, we can't live as Jews 100%. And certainly, if you think back to times where things were worse, you know, you go back, 100 years ago in Europe, you go back to the different times where we've been oppressed. In the countries nowadays where Jews are still feeling oppressed, they'll say, this is freedom, this is nobility. And the answer is, yeah, it is, because leaving Mitzrayim was an experience which will never go back. And the fact that you're free means that you're free to serve Hashem, you're Hashem's people, you're subjects of Hashem, and that spiritual freedom is eternal. So even though there might be times here and there we don't feel the same physical freedom, and the spiritual freedom is always there. So you don't need, again, we wish we had the Karban Pesach, but that's not, but the fact that you don't have it doesn't mean that the story of Pesach is irrelevant. Therefore, the Haggadah stresses that by saying that the story should be told when there's matzah and maror before you, and it neglects to mention the Karban Pesach to teach us that even nowadays there's no Karban, it's still very relevant to us. That's a very important point, because this story really is always relevant. The Haggadah then continues, next paragraph. It says, initially, our ancestors were Ovdei Avodah Zarah, they were idolaters, and now Hashem has brought us close to His service. So there's a contrast made. You know, it talks about our origins, it talks about our current status. We used to be idolaters, and now we serve Hashem. So this paragraph of the Haggadah is actually fulfilling one of the rules the Gemara says about the Seder. The Gemara says the rule of the Seder are called Maschil Beganus and Messiah Beshvach. It's supposed to begin with the disgrace and move towards the praise. So you have the contrast. We used to be slaves, now we're free. We used to serve idols, now we serve Hashem. And the Gemara stresses the importance of that contrast. And that's halacha. When you're telling the story, the halacha is you make the contrast. So he said, he brings clear from a mashal, an analogy given from Shlomo Brevda Zatzal. Rav Brevda, he just passed away a few years ago. He was an American, I think, lived in Israel, a great, very powerful speaker, very energetic. You know, he was able, very inspiring. So Rav Brevda said the following mashal. And this mashal is meant to teach us, why did the rabbis feel it was so important to make the contrast? And why is that contrast so significant? Why can't we just discuss freedom? Why do we have to dwell on the suffering? Why can't I just talk about serving God? Why do we have to dwell on the fact that we used to be idolaters? We know in general, the halacha is you're not supposed to bring up someone's past. The Mishnah says, if you know somebody is, let's say, a convert, you shouldn't mention, hey, remember what you used to do when you were a goy? You shouldn't talk to them, because it might embarrass them. If somebody is about tshuva, you don't say, remember what you used to do when you used to not be religious? You shouldn't do that, because it'll make them feel embarrassed. But we're supposed to sit here and talk about our roots as idolaters. So why is that so important? So he brings the following analogy. Imagine a survivor of the Holocaust. He was in one of the concentration camps. He's liberated, and he's free. So despite the fact that he's free, you know, he's sick, he's weak, he's in pain, he's full of disease, infections, he has no relatives, he still feels totally lost, and he still feels totally down and depressed and downtrodden despite the fact he's free, which unfortunately was a common thing, because even though they're free, they know where to go, nothing to do with themselves. So he turns out, so he thought that he had no relatives that were alive in the world. But one day he received a letter from an uncle in America. And the uncle in America, this survivor didn't realize he had an uncle in America. But this uncle tracked him down, and he sent him a letter, and he says that, you know, I learned that you were still alive, and I'm sending to you a plane, a boat ticket, and inviting you to come to America, you know, and I'll take care of you. So the survivor is so excited because he had nothing left in his name, no family, he was sick, he had no money, and someone's taking him on to take care of him. So he goes to America, and the uncle sends him in to the doctor. He gets a full examination. They heal him, cure him of his illnesses. He has to go through some surgeries and some procedures in order to come out healthy, but he takes all the proper medications, goes through the procedures, and in Baruch Hashem, he comes out healthy. And the uncle took care of everything, including the money. He paid for everything. Eventually, the uncle opened up a business, and he gave him a job. He helped him find a wife. He got married. So the uncle really took this person from nowhere, from nothing, having nothing left to his name, put him on his feet, and gave him a life, as the uncle did. So it says 20 years later, this survivor was marrying off one of his sons. And he invites his uncle to the wedding. And they're dancing together. So this guy says to his uncle, he says, "Thank you. I'm so grateful to you." So the uncle gets very upset with him. "That's all you tell me is thank you? That's it?" He pulls him aside. He says to him with an angry tone, he says, "Let's think through what I've done for you." He says, "You were somebody who was in a concentration camp. You had this disease, that disease. You had no money. You had no family." And step by step, they discussed everything the uncle did to put him to this place right now, where he was a healthy person, married, children, marrying off a child. And so this survivor says to his uncle, "Why right now, in the middle of my son's simcha, are you telling me this? Why are you making me feel guilty, feel bad at this moment?" He says, "You're telling me thank you. What are you thanking me for? That I gave you thousands and thousands of dollars to bring you to where you are today? That's it? I want you to be able to recognize everything I've done for you." So when we go to Hashem at the Seder really is like this moment of simcha. We are sitting there as free people. And we just say, "Hashem, thank you, Hashem." So that doesn't quite cut it. Because we have to understand, where do we come from? Where are we now? And what brought us here? And if we don't recognize that at the moment, we're missing the boat. And we're missing the whole purpose of the gratitude to be given over at the Seder. So all you want to tell me is thank you. All you want to mention maybe is making me your people, giving me the Torah, freeing me from Mitzrayim. I mean, there's such a long list. Dayenu, that's a Dayenu list. It goes through every single thing specifically. But we have to be able to recognize every single step along the way that allowed us to be where we are. And if we don't mention that, then we're selling ourselves short in the gratitude we owe to Hashem. And we're selling Hashem short, as it were, not giving proper gratitude. So the rabbis say it's very important at the Seder that you maskil begunus, you begin with the bad and move towards the good. Because you want to be able to give full gratitude, you want to be able to specify everything that was done to bring you to this point. And then that's the idea. So, and at the Seder, the truth is, even though in the Haggadah might just give you a little summary, a one-liner, our job is to really think through that. Okay, how did we move from being slaves to being free? And then what were those steps? What did Hashem provide for us along the way? How do we move from being idolaters to being servants of Hashem? And what were the steps that it took to get to that point? And how grateful are we for those steps? And so the Seder is a time of gratitude. And one of the main goals of the Seder is to develop that sense of gratitude to Hashem for what He's done for us. So that gratitude means I have to be able to specify all those points, because that's true gratitude. If I can't specify the points, so then the gratitude is really only half-hearted. It's just, it's just a matter of etiquette, but it's not showing a true heartfelt sense of gratitude. Okay. Stop there.
Very good, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. So.